Welcome to another edition of Hockey the Podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are in the world, you are listening to your favorite hockey podcast and glad to bring it to you as always. And of course, as always, we've got another stellar guest lined up. Lined up by who else but Tyron Jabu Barnard. How you doing, Ty?
Good day to you, and yeah, absolutely looking forward to it. We are edging our way towards the Tokyo Olympic Games, Tokyo 2021, South Africans are going. Sasikoki have not stopped them. They qualified, the men qualified on both criteria, and they are going, the men and women, and we're excited. We're 19 days away from the Tokyo Olympic Games, 20 days away from the Hockey South Africa versus Great Britain, our first game up. And so obviously there's going to be a major Olympic focus over the next couple of episodes of Hockey the Podcast, and hopefully giving you some great news as South Africa shock the world and make it into the top four and play for a medal. But of course, as long as we go there and can ruffle some feathers, which we know we can do, we will be pretty pleased and proud as South Africans.
It's amazing to think that we are on the cusp of the Olympics. It feels so surreal. We've just witnessed the British and Irish Lions match take on the Johannesburg Lions, and we know that they'll be taking the Springboks in a couple of weeks' time. The Olympics is just around the corner. We're watching cricket again. It seems like normality is starting to return, some semblance of it at least. Of course, South Africa in the grip of a third wave of the pandemic. Yet, We push through, and I don't think there's more of a shining light than that beacon of hope that is Tokyo 2020, Ty.
Absolutely, Derek. I mean, it's just that little bit of feeling on Friday night when I had a braai with my wife and my boys, and Colby got to watch rugby. I'll be honest, he wasn't very interested for very long because he fell asleep. But, you know, just that feeling of being able to come together and watch our national team in action just brought that normality back a bit. Having the SA men play Namibia recently was great for the hockey, but to see us on an international stage again, it's just that step towards normal, because we know normal is a long way away. We don't actually know when normal will actually happen, Derek, but you know, those small things, just from a mental health point of view, are great and give us that little bit of hope that the world is starting to heal.
Yeah, it does put a smile on my face just thinking that the Olympics, we can see it in action sooner rather than later. And, of course, you and I won't be going. Our business partner, Ray, will be over there, and he'll be covering the stories and the results of many a sportsman and woman over in Tokyo, including, Ty, our very esteemed guests on the show.
Absolutely. Ray will be in the village. He's part of Team South Africa, and another man who's part of Team South Africa, not for the first time, not for the second time, but for the third time, and we probably should have been saying for the fourth time, but our triple Olympian, Austin Smith. Ozzy, welcome to Hockey the Podcast. Great to have you back again. We know you're an avid listener or a massive supporter, and we appreciate it. But more importantly, it's our job to support you now. So welcome, and how are you feeling ahead of Tokyo?
Yeah, how's it, guys? Morning to both of you. It's great to be back on the show. It felt pretty funny actually listening to the intro, because normally I'm driving in my car on my way to school or on my way home from school, and I hear that intro and it gets me all excited to hear who the guest is going to be. So it seems funny listening to it on the other side. But I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm down here in the West Coast, at a small place called Britannia Bay, and while I'm speaking to you, I'm looking out on the waves, so I'm feeling extremely relaxed. I feel like this is the ideal break before the busy period coming up.
Obviously, this has been very different from your previous experiences. You went to Beijing in 2008, you went to London in 2012, you obviously were denied the opportunity to go to Rio in 2016, but this must be the strangest preparation you've ever had for any international tournament.
Yes. Simply put, yes. I think I've had a few bizarre experiences. I think the Beijing experience, I wasn't really expecting to go to the Olympics, and I dreamed about it for such a long time, and then I went, which was incredible. London, we had to qualify twice, so that felt a little bit strange. And for these Olympics, I feel like I need to qualify like 100 times. Like this morning, I did another COVID test here at home, and I feel like all those little tests, every time I see that positive, it almost feels like another qualification point and one step closer to being allowed into the village. So, I definitely think these are going to be an exceptional Olympic Games, like none other, or hopefully it won't be repeated like this. But I'm still definitely looking forward to it. And I think just for everyone in the world to be able to see an event like this, I think is going to be a great beacon of hope for everyone, I'm sure.
And Oz, obviously, you know, you've got the OLY letters behind your name on a professional qualification level. You've experienced it. You've experienced the 2008, which was a really tough Olympics for South Africa, 2012, which was better. But how does it change mentally? Obviously, you are an Olympian, but that drive to go back to the Olympics never diminishes. But, you know, mentally, how are you feeling compared to your previous Olympic journeys from a personal point of view?
I definitely think all the Olympics are unique. But, yeah, from my perspective, this is more than likely going to be my last chance at an Olympic Games. And, yeah, having experienced the village life and the craziness that involves, having played at that level, I really want to go to these Olympics now and achieve something special. That would be my dream, to achieve something special as a team. And, yeah, really, like, individually, just to give, like, the best account I can of myself and to look back and be like, wow, I really ended on an incredibly high, and it wasn't one of those moments where people say, ooh, maybe that was one step too far. So I'm very cautious of that. Also with my club side in the Netherlands, I've made that very clear that once they think that I can't add any more value, then I want that to be it. So these Olympics, I'm really focusing on playing to the best of my ability and really ending off my Olympic career on a high.
Awesome. Great to have you back on the show. I know Ty alluded to it a little earlier, the fact that, of course, the Olympics are coming, but, you know, it was touch and go for many a month, many a year even. What is that sense like to you? I mean, as a man that's been there before, he knows what it is like. I can imagine in the past, having booked your plane ticket to the Olympics, you knew it was coming, that was going to be the case last year, then it was scrapped, and okay, well, we're going to postpone it, and then you get stories emanating from Tokyo saying that the fans don't even want it there, and then you get another third wave popping up. So all these roadblocks popping up and down. Did you almost, was it almost a case of you'd resigned yourself to whatever happens, happens, or were you, did you know deep in your heart that you would be going, the Olympics would be I'm trying to get a sense of what it feels like as a sports person to hinge your entire life on an event, which for the good part of 2 years, you weren't sure if it was going to happen or not.
Oof, difficult to explain exactly how my thought process, and more kind of like from a feeling perspective, how that's gone. It's been, of course, it's been very up and down, because you go through moments where, I think the point that you touched on, the Japanese public, like a large majority of the Japanese public saying that they didn't even want the Olympics to come. That, I don't know, that did something to me. I thought, well, normally countries are so excited, and especially the buzz that was in and around London. Like everyone was loving the atmosphere. And then to imagine going there and almost being looked down on, and people not really celebrating the fact that you're there as an Olympian. That took a little bit of time to get through. More recently, I think I've been more excited about actually just being on the field and if they're going to be spectators there or not. I just have this feeling of being there with Team South Africa, whatever shape or form that goes. But actually just being out on the field and playing with the team, I think the last 2 weeks that we had in Potchefstroom has really energize me to a new level. In fact, like, wow, this is going to be amazing to play with these guys out on the field. Everyone's going to become an Olympian. We're going to be playing against other countries. So that's sort of making it feel a little bit more real. I think if I look a little bit further back for the past 6 months, I think I realized how lucky I was to be playing in the Netherlands, that my club team made it through to the playoffs, that really helped drive me and push me. And yeah, I have to be honest, that for a while my focus was more at my club team and just trying to do the best that I could there. And I think that was probably a good thing, because there was so much uncertainty, you know, between January and April even. There was so much uncertainty. So I think it was better that I just gave full attention to playing well for my club side. And ultimately, I know that that's helped me be in the physical condition that I am now.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I think I can guarantee you that the Japanese public will welcome the Olympians with open arms. I do also think that it's probably a very much a segregated section of the city that they probably went and canvassed. Who knows? But again, I think when you get into the hype, you do enjoy it a lot more. It's a little different. A couple of years back, we went to Bolivia for the Dakar Rally, and we arrived there, and they were under the rule of a pretty nasty bloke by the name of Evo Morales. And we arrived into the town of La Paz, and for kilometers and kilometers, as far as the eye could see, we were welcomed by fans who were holding up the signs saying, you know, welcome Dakar riders, and it was quite cool to see. But everyone holding the signs, I mean, they didn't have smiles on their faces at all. And then you look at one line back, and there's members of the Bolivian army all standing there with AK-47s in their hands. And they basically forced their fans to go and welcome the everyone. And as you enter the city, you see the graffiti written everywhere, and there are these swear words just saying, basically, piss off, Dakar. So that was the real welcoming that we got. Never mind the fake stuff out in front. But I can guarantee you that won't be the case for you in Japan. I'm sure that the Tokyo public, despite what we've heard, are very, very happy to see the Olympics come to town. Now, you mentioned your club side, Den Bosch, and you say you've been focusing on their achievements over the last season or two. And it was an impressive season. Playoffs for the first time in 20 years?
Correct, yeah. Playoffs for the first time in 20 years. It's something that I've been dreaming of winning the Hope Cluster since I was pretty young. So the fact that we got that much closer, and the fact that it was really special for the club. Again, it was a little bit heartbreaking that we have a wonderful, wonderful group of people who come down to support us. A lot of the old members of the club who can remember still when the club won the league, also 20 years ago. So for them not to be able to be there because of the COVID restrictions at the time was really tough, but they were extremely proud, and I was proud to be part of the group that had worked together for, yeah, we've had the large majority of the group have been together for the past 6 or 7 years. So that was really special to do it with our own group. We hadn't found money somewhere to bring in loads of internationals, so it was really a really special team effort.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, playing without the fans. I mean, knowing you as long as I have now, I know you're a good family man, and your family love to travel around the world and support you. You know, it must also be strange because, as you yourself have said, you don't have 1,000 years left at the top. And these are some really great moments. I mean, Den Bosch getting to the playoffs, going to the Tokyo Games. What is the impact on you mentally that your family aren't able to get across for these events?
I don't think it's really hit home yet that my parents and my brothers, sisters, or even my fiance won't be at the Olympics. I did feel a few months back when it was made official that foreign fans won't be allowed to come, and That was a tough moment, because my parents and I have a sister in Australia and a sister in South Africa. My brother's also in South Africa, but especially my two sisters had done so much work to find accommodation that was at least affordable, because Tokyo is not the cheapest place to stay. So they had ticked that box, and then they had done, I can't even imagine how many hours they had worked to sign up on almost every single Olympic ticket registry that there was in the world. They'd got friends who were based in other countries to apply for hockey tickets. They'd got tickets. Some of the tickets were for different games. They were busy on swapping websites. And they'd basically arranged that we had, I think, 8 tickets for every game so that everyone could be there. So to hear the final announcement of them being told that no foreign spectators would be welcome was pretty gut-wrenching for them. I just felt so powerless. They'd done so much to make sure that they were there. And that means, it means the absolute world to me. But I think when I get there, and usually after the game, we have half an hour before the bus goes back to the village or to the hotel to see friends and family. I think that moment's going to be a little bit odd because they've been to so many of our events that that's going to be a bit strange after the game where we just head straight back. Yeah, probably immediately back onto the bus. There won't be any wandering around. So yeah, that's going to be a great shame, but I am incredibly grateful for all the events that I have been at and all the, I can't even begin to tell you how much effort they put in. It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal what they did.
No, they, I mean, literally, if you watch over the years, when we've had coverage, you'll always see a very proudly South African hat.
Not just a hat, a proudly dressed everything yeah, is absolutely. South African.
You know, that is the Smith family. And there's also a really cool photo. I think it was in Stellenbosch when you guys had the Road to Tokyo qualifier. With you and everyone with their Smith shirts on the other side of the fence.
Yes, well, yeah. Fortunately, I have a very generous sponsor who Princess had made those shirts, and they'd hand them out to my family and even my niece and nephews. So everyone had a shirt. That's a very special photo, actually. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, we'll share that on social media just so you guys know what we're talking about. But yeah, absolutely. I did digress and move back to Tokyo, but I want to go back to Holland now. Obviously, Den Bosch making the playoffs, COVID not allowing you a third and fourth playoff. So it means that you guys unfortunately finished in fourth place, if I'm correct, and no EHL next year. Yeah, were guys disappointed by that? Or is that almost something that's fired the guys up to take it the step further next year?
Yeah, the third and fourth, to be honest, even as captain, I didn't even realize that that wasn't going ahead. So after the game, I was speaking to some of the guys. You know, obviously we were disappointed to lose to Bloemendaal in the semi-final. We gave a great account of ourselves. I actually thought we played really well and better than when we played them in the first league game. And yeah, the scoreline wasn't very flattering, but I thought we actually played well. So that was a shame. And after the second game when we'd lost, I was speaking to some of the guys saying, well, yeah, we've still got the chance for the EHL ticket. And they looked at me and they called me Charles. I don't know why they called me by my middle name. They're like, Charlesy, this is the end of the season. I was like, no, guys, the EHL. And I was still pretty pumped, you know, because it's another chance to play and to be part of this kind of playoff atmosphere. And then, someone explained to me that that was it. And I don't know if I'd missed the article or missed the announcement. So that was a great shame, but at least we've got something that resembles the EHL to look forward to in, I think it's in October. That was still from last year when we finished second in the league. So we're playing like what they're calling like a European Cup. So that's at least, some kind of reward for 2 years of good performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should be quite interesting. Of course, your ladies side though, continued to do incredibly well and lifted had some good success again this year. Is there quite a nice relationship between the men's and women's sides?
Yes, our ladies' side. It's unbelievable what they have managed to produce over the last 15 years. I mean, a lot of the time they've had the best side on paper, but of course that's the special thing about sport. It doesn't mean if you have the best side on paper that you end up winning, but their statistics over the last 15 years are something else. And I think this year, I don't even think they actually had the best team on paper, and they still ground out another league win. So it's very impressive. In terms of relationship, it's not amazing because they train kind of in between at alternate times. So at meal times, we don't see them. On a Friday, they train before us. And especially the last year, we've kept the two teams very separate. So I would say before this year, we did a few social events together, but because a lot of the national players train on a Monday and, you know, the vast majority of the ladies team play in the national team, so they go straight to training on Monday. Not everyone lives in Limbos. I mean, some of the ladies, quite a few of them actually live outside of Limbos, up in Amsterdam. So they've got to travel an hour back. So after games, a lot of the ladies players tend to head off back home and start their recovery so they can meet with the national team the next day. I think there's definitely a lot of respect between the groups, but we don't do too much together now. The calendar is really full, so there's not all that much time. It's not quite the same as it is in the club setups in South Africa.
Orson, we've spoken about the achievements that you managed to achieve with the club from the club's point of view, but from a personal point of view, also some massive highlights that you secured this season, including your 100th goal, which is pretty impressive given the fact that you're only the second foreigner to achieve the feat alongside your good mate Justin Reid-Ross.
Indeed. Yeah, I actually really am proud of that that fact because in general, South Africans aren't held in too high regard in the Netherlands. I think when clubs look at South Africans, they just think of, yeah, your country ranked 13th, 14th, 15th in the world. You haven't got that many really like superstars. So until we actually get over there and we play and they realize, okay, these guys can actually offer something. So the fact that the only two foreigners to have made 100 goals are South African actually means quite a bit to me. And to share that honor with Justin, as you say, he is a very good friend of mine. I got to meet up with him just before I came down to South Africa. Yeah, that is something really special. I still have a long, long way to go. I think I need to play about another 20 seasons to take the lead. So I think I'm happy to give Justin that one for now.
Yeah, he's also a very good friend of the show. I know that you two are involved in a tug of war to see who can make the most appearances on Hockey the Podcast. That's also an achievement that you two must fight over. But it's interesting you speak about the South African connection because we all know the South African mentality when it comes to sport is extremely strong and always the will to succeed. And I suppose the club does immediately look at the rankings, etc., or foreign players do look at the rankings and they just assume, as you said, that they can't be that good. And then they actually get to experience a player and they said, well, geez, that was a bit of a surprise. On that note, South Africans currently plying their trade in South Africa. Who do you think, and of course I'm not wanting to exclude people, but just with the top of your head, who do you think would really be at home over in the Netherlands and who would strive over there?
Yeah, I don't want to sound too cliche, but I honestly think that our biggest strength as a nation is that we are fighters, we are loyal, we work extremely hard, and that's why I think it often tends to work out for South Africans who have gone and played abroad. Players in the past who've come over have generally stayed at a club for a long time because guys realize, wow, this guy is a fighter, he's going to do absolutely everything. And I think that's why South Africans have been successful. I think it's the difficult part is getting your foot in the door and getting to a club. And that's why I always encourage guys, don't look at players who are ending off their careers there and they're on these, I don't want to say big salaries, but they're on salaries. Just try and get over there, say you'll play for free, and then they'll soon realize, wow, this lady really has something special to offer. We do want to give them a proper contract. But if you're going to push me for an answer, Derek, I would definitely say yes. Some of our younger guys, I think they're definitely looking. A lot of European clubs are looking for someone they can make an investment long term. They're not really that keen on having a guy come over for 1 or 2 years. So I'd say younger guys who are going to be able to set up a life there for 5, 6 years, something like that. So I'm immediately thinking of Beely and Thule up front, Diane, Mustafa, Ryan Julius has already come over and done a stellar job at Almere. They were incredibly happy. I know he had some offers from other clubs because he had put in such a good performance. And then you know you've really made a good name for yourself if other clubs start asking you and inviting you over to their club. We've already got quite a few, actually, to be honest, playing overseas. I think like Matt Gijsbrown doing exceptionally well in England. But yeah, basically any young player who's in our national team at the moment, I'd say give it a go. There's the worst that can happen is that it doesn't go well and then you come back to South Africa. But otherwise, I say yeah, just go for it.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Matt Gijsbrown playing in England. You, of course, played in England first, moved over. Is there a league that you would have loved to try that you maybe never got the opportunity to?
Well, I would have definitely loved to play in a USA tournament here in South Africa. I've heard so many amazing stories about playing in USA tournaments in South Africa. So I guess that's one competition I would have enjoyed playing in. As far as any leagues, yeah, I just enjoy playing in foreign leagues because you learn so much. You play against different styles, different routines, different mentalities. Yeah, the Australian League I always thought was interesting because, well, especially in Perth where the national players are based, and I like the aggression that the Aussies play with. I think I would have liked to have gone and tested myself in that environment. But no, otherwise, in general, I would think guys should just go and play overseas to get an experience and just to see hockey from a different perspective and, yeah, get a different understanding and to learn. I think that's the most beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's also what some guys find is, you know, obviously the Werfter Klasse is the league that has the reputation. It's a league that, you know, as a youngster following hockey, that's the league you want to tick. Maybe the next one down is the Bundesliga. And obviously the English Premier League is highly ranked. But, you know, for a lot of guys, they maybe get, what's the word I'm looking for, blinded by the Werfter Klasse lights, and they don't realize that going over to some place like Belgium first, which is a really good league, which takes on a lot of South Africans, offers you a great window into playing in Europe, and is something that they shouldn't look miss the opportunity to do.
No, absolutely not. I mean, one of the things that clubs look at is, okay, can this guy survive in another environment? Not suited to everyone. Some people go away from home for a year, and they really, really struggle. I certainly did at the start. I'm glad that my family motivated me to push on through the dark times. But that it does take something special, I think, to be able to thrive in an environment that isn't yours, in a culture that isn't yours. You're going to different venues. You're playing in a new style. It's a different language. It's a lot to take in. And some people, and not just Africans, I mean, I've had teammates. I've had a Spanish international, an Argentinian international player at Dimbos. At one stage, he was voted the best junior player in the world. He came to Dimbos and, yeah, he just couldn't fit into the style of play, and he really didn't thrive, and yeah, he therefore also didn't really enjoy his time with us. So that was a great shame. So that is something that that big clubs look at. They say, okay, has this guy played overseas before? Has he got experience of being on his own, playing in a different environment? So yeah, that's why I was glad that I just made the step overseas. I was in England. I wasn't being paid to play. They helped me find a job, fortunately. But I mean, at that stage, we were still paying to play. You had to pay match fees. You had to pay cup fees. We even paid for our kit at that stage. So then to finally have that experience and then to go over to the Netherlands and start actually getting paid a little bit, I think that was a good step to take.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I wanted to ask is, obviously, you experienced Hockey India League, and it was the one tournament that offered potential to pay players a decent amount when they eventually did pay, and if they eventually pay. What do you think is stopping hockey from having something like that, that explosive tournament? Because hockey has a mass following around the world. It really does. There are millions of people that watch. The idea that the Pro League was the answer to this hasn't quite turned over. It's too exclusive. It hasn't really triggered. You know, what's stopping hockey from taking that next step to say, we don't want to be the second tier sport anymore. We want to be a first tier sport and take us seriously.
Sure. That's I feel like if I had the answer to that, then I would be almost like create world peace, Ty. Yeah, what is stopping hockey from becoming an incredibly attractive
kind of
spectator sport?
Ask the beauty pageant before they decide who's looking.
Exactly. I don't know. I can tell you what I think that's definitely made a difference, and that's maybe something that people often don't think about. But I think the fact that we've now got high definition TV. And people in general have better quality TVs. The filming, the production is better quality, that you can actually see the individual skill, and it's not this kind of blurry, pixelated image of someone running with some type of object. It's actually, you can actually see the intricate detail and the skill level of players, which I think is has definitely helped. How are we going to get hockey as big as some of the other sports? Sure. I'm just going to be honest and say I don't have the answer to that one. I would love to see it there. The Pro League, yeah, I think the Pro League is perhaps a step in the right direction for the elite countries in the world, but I don't think it's the answer for hockey in general, though. I think that's going to create a huge gap between the haves and the have-nots. So I'm not a massive fan, but at least even as a spectator, I just enjoy being able to see hockey most weekends, or pre-COVID, we're seeing hockey most weekends. So I think that was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I sit in the camp that I don't think they took the right model for it, the right product. I think the model is not bad, but I think club hockey is where we really should look to elevate the game. Leave your World Cup and the Olympics as your international pedigree events, but imagine we could build, you know, like the EHL has, but more of a global thing where, you know, let's get the South African champion club over to play a series against, I mean, and they will probably take a bit of a thumping, but, you know, let's get the South Africans over, let's get the Australian club champions over, and let's have almost a World Club Cup over in Holland there at The Hague or something. I mean, I think that could be something really special. And
definitely.
Also, what a great spectacle it would be.
Absolutely, yeah. If you can arrange that the next few years before a tie, I'd be very grateful.
Yeah, look,
I'd definitely be keen to play.
Just looking for a sponsor, so if Sahara Computers or anyone is available. we're not going down that line, hey, Derek? We don't want to be associated there. Hey?
No, I don't know. Money talks. it's strange, though, Austin, because it's well documented, and I've spoken about it on the show quite often, in that my first introduction to hockey was a couple of years ago, from a live perspective, was when Ty and I commentated on their tri-series. It was an indoor series that took place in Durban, featured South Africa, yeah, Zimbabwe, and Botswana. And I was absolutely blown away. And it is exactly that. I think the fact that hockey gets more coverage now certainly helps, but it does amaze me how certain sports just are immediately picked up by the public, and through tradition and through parents enjoying it, et cetera, et cetera, then they become popular. Other sports, not so much. And I'll go and sit in the hockey game, and I think, how are more people not enjoying this? And it's not even that. It's not about them not enjoying it. It's about people not being aware of it. I think that's the difference, because I can guarantee you, I could take 20 people and put them into a hockey game to watch, and 19, if not 20 people, will enjoy it. And you know it, Ty knows it, I know it, our listeners know it, because they're obviously all hockey fans. And it's just about getting that awareness out to say there's a sport out there which is enthralling, it's exciting, it can be nail-biting at times, the skills on show are phenomenal, and unlike anything you'll see, the athletes involved are in the best shape of their life and probably in the best shape of most sports people's lives, yet we don't have the numbers, we don't have the money. Why? Just getting it out there, that's all we want.
Do you think that, I often wonder if the technical side and the rule side is often a hindrance to our sport, that there are so many intricate rules. I don't know, when you first sat there, maybe that's a good person to ask, when you first sat there watching, do you think, well, why is the umpire blowing the whistle there? Oh, what's going on there? Like, oh, surely that's a foul. Why not? Isn't that obstruction? Especially if we compare it to football with the bizarre obstruction rule. Like, did you feel a bit confused watching?
Well, luckily for me, I mean, I had Ty with me, so I had a good sounding board and I could immediately go to him and find out. And as soon as it was explained to me, it made so much more sense. And it's interesting because I've covered a lot of Olympic events in the past from a commentary point of view. And a lot of the time I think, oh, geez, I'm doing this sport. I've got no idea what it's about. So I'd go and read up on it. Immediately, once I found out more about the sport and understood its intricacies and its rules, it was a whole new world. And it's a cliche, but knowledge is power. And once you understand something, it becomes so much more enjoyable. And that's exactly what the case was with every single sport that I covered in the Olympics, from curling to dressage, etc. And I suppose you could say that, but I mean, hockey isn't that... I mean, you look at rugby. I mean, rugby's got a million rules, and yet they've got a billion fans. and rugby is one of the most complicated sports ever. Look at test cricket, for example. I had a Greek cousin come out who can't even speak English. I took him to a day of test match cricket, and by the end of the day, he was hooked. He couldn't understand a thing, didn't know what the hell was going on, still doesn't know what's going on, yet he enjoys it. And to be fair, I mean, test cricket, I mean, I absolutely love it, but to someone who knows nothing about it, you could come and sit there for a day and think, yeah, this is actually pretty boring. So I don't know, maybe it is a rules thing, and I mean, maybe there's a way to educate the viewers better and say this is how it works and try and get it out there as to how exactly a game of hockey unfolds. I don't know. And like you said, it's if we knew this, we could solve world peace and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah, I also want to interject there, though, because I think, you know, the other thing is you got to know your product and know your audience. So here in South Africa, we launched the PHL a few years back. And the PHL in principle has a really good idea, a good offering, a good compact service. I think in practice, there's a few things we could do to streamline it and improve it. But SuperSports took the rights and they put it on a Saturday and a Sunday. And it was on at the same time as Currie Cup, Premier League football, Super Rugby it may have been at the time. Tennis, Formula One. And if you're trying to break the mold and you're trying to get people to move across to a sport maybe that they don't regularly watch, you've got to kind of put it in a time where it's not competing with the sports that everybody does watch. And here in South Africa, traditionally, cricket, rugby, soccer. So if there is a Saturday, I mean, everyone knows in South Africa, Saturday is rugby day. You know, that comes first. And then the other sport that runs on that day is football day. So, you know, I'd almost love to see things like the PHL being Friday night lights, Thursday night lights, you know, maybe Thursday, Friday. Maybe we play Saturday mornings. You know, I just think outside the box a little bit. And, you know, as much as it was great having SuperSport cover that, I really don't think they got the coverage or the viewership that they wanted, because even the big dedicated hockey fans are usually also other sports fans too. And when you dilute the attention, it's never going to give you the numbers that makes a sponsor turn around and say, sure, but this is the sport that I want to watch. But if you were to do like François Pinault did and did Varsity Cups, made Varsity Sports move to a Monday, I mean, I'm sure if SuperSport went back and showed you their numbers, their Varsity hockey coverage probably was some of their best viewership numbers.
That's probably true. Sure, I feel like we're solving a lot of problems here, guys. So far, we've got the World Club Hockey League. We've got Friday Night Lights, PHL. And maybe if I can add in maybe something useful to this conversation, I really like when rugby started miking the umpires and being able to hear what the foul was. And I felt like, as a non-rugby person myself, I felt like I learned a lot from that, and having little bits of text pop up at the bottom of the screen saying offside or whatever it was, I think that was really helpful. I felt educated and I felt more interested to watch. I thought, oh, look, I could point something out and I could understand why something was what it was. Yeah, it could be a little bit more challenging because hockey is so quick. We don't always have time to put the umpire's mic on and hear the explanation because play goes on. But something that could perhaps help on the education front.
Fully agree. I think there's often times that, when you watch rugby and you see a decision and then the umpire, the ref talks about it and, you know, okay, I don't agree necessarily, but I can see why you did that and it makes sense. And yeah, it would be interesting. As obviously, the big thing on the horizon now is Tokyo. I mean, obviously, the dream is to go there and win a medal. Realistically, that's probably a little bit of a stretch too far. Not saying it can't happen, but...
Very nicely worded, Tyron.
Yeah, there we go. Let me not get kicked out of SA Hockey. But, I mean, what would be a successful Olympics for you?
Oh, it's difficult to say because at the moment, I was talking to my family about it recently, and my dad is asking, like, oh, where do you think you are as a team? And I thought, well, I was counting back, like the last time I was a part of the team that we played a top 10 team was 2018. So we're now kind of 3 years further on. And we've just played against the South African 21s. We played four games. We played against Northwest University with a couple of our reserves playing for them. And I thought, oh yeah, things are coming along. There's some shapes and tactics that are working, but how that's going to look against Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, Great Britain, yeah, and to some extent Canada, I honestly have no idea. I think we're going to get a good idea of where we are when we get to Tokyo and we play our two practice games. But until then, it's a big unknown, to be honest. So what our end goal is, I don't actually know. Yeah, I will never stop dreaming of winning. I don't care what sport or game I'm playing. I'm always going for the win. So the dream is to win gold, absolutely, and that's what it was. Yeah, every time I've gone to a competition, what is achievable? I actually have no idea, but we're preparing as well as we can, and we are going to go out there and we're going to go and give it absolutely everything in all of our games, and then yeah, at the end we'll see where we are.
Awesome. That's magnificent, Ian. And we didn't expect anything less, to be honest. And, we love having you on the show and we wish you all of the best over in Tokyo. But before we get into that, I know you speak about going for gold over in Tokyo, but you've also got to go for gold one more time in the one question quiz. Live in the moment till I die. Okay, this is a pretty easy one, I think. If you're a fan, I actually only really found out about it a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was amazing.
Sorry, Derek, I'm not going to fall for that one, because I don't know how many times I've heard on the show, yeah, you should know this, or this is quite an easy one, and it's been completely obscure, so please don't even start with that line.
This is actually not obscure, but I wasn't a massive viewer of the series, so I only really got to know it the other day, and I thought, oh man, that is so cool. Okay, so James Bond had a massive enemy called Oddjob. What was that version's name in the series in Austin Powers?
This is
obscure.
You see, so Ty reckons it's easy. I had no idea.
No, I have no idea.
Okay, so Oddjob was the enemy in James Bond, but in the Austin Powers version, what was that guy's name? An Oddjob, I don't know.
The only benefit I have is that the Austin Powers series was amazing.
Yeah.
And I always feel old when I say to kids, they say, oh, like, what's your name? Especially in the Netherlands. And I say, oh, Austin, like Austin Powers. And then they say, what's that? And I'm like, what do you mean, what's that? And then I realized, oh, that actually came out like in the 1990s, and I'm really old now, so let's just move on from that. I always say, Jim, they look at me thinking I'm a bit crazy. All right, who was Oddjob in the Austin Power series?
Yeah, what was his name? And remember, they always had a little twist on the names.
I'm trying to think of, like, two characters. I just want to think of characters from Austin Powers. I've got Dr. Evil and Goldmember in my head, and that's all I've got. So can I answer with two, and they're probably both wrong?
Five. Four. Do you know, Ty?
I don't know.
Thank you.
But I was trying to do the correlation there with how you got to this question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
And then I was like, okay, Tyrant. Austin. and then I was like, I remember that in some powers I like to just, so if it was...
It's a play on words.
Yeah, it was a play on words, so they would have taken the name and done something with it.
Yes.
I would play with something like that.
Exactly.
But no, I don't know that. No.
Do you give up?
Derek, coming up.
Austin Powers is $1 million if it was even.
so we said, and I mean, viewers and big fans of the series would be sitting at home now thinking, when the cars, thinking, how can you not know this? But I had no idea. And I was sitting around a braai a couple of days ago in Uppington, and it was brought up by a friend of mine, Voldo, and I thought, that is genius. I love the guy's name. But the guy that you're looking for in James Bond, the bloke's name was Oddjob. But in Austin Powers, his name was Random Task.
This is exactly what I meant by this is going to be an easy one. This is absolutely not easy. And I take my hat off to anyone who's listening to this that actually linked those two things together.
Random Task was the guy's name in the Austin Powers series, which Austin Smith got wrong. But he won't do wrong over in Tokyo. Austin, it's been so good having you on the show once again.
Wonderful. It's great. Great chatting to you guys. I'm looking forward to listening to this again when I get back to Netherlands and I'm back at my job. But it's been wonderful to chat to you guys again, and thank you for your support. It's brilliant to have you guys part of the hockey family. I love it.
Yeah, and good luck for Tokyo. Enjoy your third Olympic Games and go out there, and I don't really have to say this because I know you will, but go out there and make the country proud.
Thank you. I'm going to absolutely do my best.
Cheers, Austin. Thanks so much, man. As always.
Cheers, guys.
Give it horns over in Tokyo. Tyre, congratulations on another great guest. The Olympics is around the corner. Make sure to watch every single minute of the action. And Tyre, I won't see you on the golf course anytime soon. We're taking a bit of a break following a great weekend a couple of weekends ago. But we'll be watching the Olympics fast and furiously. I can't wait.
Yeah, South Africa versus Great Britain on the 24th of July is our first game. And, of course, our women play on the same day against Ireland. So that should be great crack. Remember, you can follow all the action wherever you want over the social media channels. We'll be posting updates. Of course, Tokyo has, and the Olympic Games has some strict rules. So our graphics might look nothing like Tokyo or anything like that. But we'll have results. We'll be having updates, and we're looking forward to seeing it and hoping that the South African teams can go there and just ruffle some feathers, you know. We've seen the South African men produce some great moments of quality in recent years, and they're starting to flirt with climbing back up into the top 10. Let's see if they can do it at the Oi Hockey Stadium in Tokyo, just 20 days away.
Can't wait. Cheers, Ty.
Just.